The Enneagram 2, known as the Helper. Twos are empathetic, sincere, and warm-hearted. They're friendly, generous, and self-sacrificing, but can also be flattering and people-pleasing. They're well-meaning and driven to be close to others, but can slip into doing things for others in order to be needed. They typically have problems with possessiveness and knowing what they need themselves. Their key motivations are to be loved, needed, and appreciated, show their feelings for others, and get a response from those who they care for in return. Welcome to the Enneagram Unplugged, the podcast where we sit down to spend some quality time with someone from each number on the Enneagram. Through questions and shared experiences, we hope that this show will leave you feeling a little more connected, encouraged, and enlightened as you continue along your Enneagram journey. We're your hosts, Ashley Danner
and Kristen Steed. Woohoo!
Huge fans of the Enneagram, friends and coworkers here at Christ United, please feel free to reach out to us if you ever have any questions or requests for our show.
Today we get to sit down with Reverend Reagan Gilliland, our newest member of staff and associate pastor of adult discipleship here at the church, and an Enneagram 2. Welcome, Reagan.
Hi, thanks for having me, and good job on the last name. I apologize. My maiden name was Welsh. It was much easier.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Scott should have taken your name.
He really should have.
So, yeah. I mean, more syllables means more everything.
Sure. Right? Yeah. We joked about naming our kids like Lillian Gilliland. But we're like, probably shouldn't do that.
What is the origin of Gilliland?
I think it's Scottish. Okay. I want to say.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see that.
We have decided if the ministry thing doesn't work out that we're going to open up our own amusement park called Gilliland. So
please do.
I feel like it's a solid backup plan.
A little bit like Ren Faire with like bread bowls and soup, but also sure. Like bumper cars.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm here for that. And for those that don't know, Reagan's husband is also a pastor.
Oh, yes.
So it will be, we could have some interesting conversations there too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Clergy couple. Right.
So let's dive into this now. We're going to talk all about the Enneagram 2 today. Reagan, would you mind just giving us a little overall explanation of the twos and what information you know about them?
Sure. So I'm going to start with all the good stuff, as every number has. So yep. Twos, you know, are commonly people that are pastors or like teachers, people that, you know, we're called the helper. So any sort of kind of job or calling that has more of a servant kind of heart, you're going to find most of your twos that are that. And so the twos are known again for being servant-minded, helpers, always thinking of other people's needs. You know, they're the friend that are gonna kind of think three steps ahead of how they can care for you, and they're just really good at observing, which is really, you know, is really great. But mm-hmm. The twos are also, because they put so much into caring for other people, is that they can also really neglect themselves. They maybe are poor, obviously, at self-care. The big thing is they don't know how to articulate their own needs because they've been so focused on everyone else. So there's that. And then sometimes their motivation is to just to do things for others is because they want to be needed. They want to be wanted. They want to be thanked. They want to be kind of like have mm-hmm. trophies and stuff, which can, it just can move real unhealthy, real, real fast. So that's kind of the short thing about the twos, I guess.
Yeah. I'm also a two. So it's funny to hear it said back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, no, I empathize with everything you said. How long have you been reading or studying or investigating the Enneagram for?
That's a good question. So one thing that our conference does really well is when you're going through ordination stuff, you have to take a couple all day seminars with mm-hmm. Suzanne Stabile. Usually, sometimes it's her daughter or other people, but usually it's her teaching. And so I want to say the first one I did was probably maybe 5 years ago, I want to say. Mm-hmm. The ordination process is so long, I kind of forget like when, yeah, you, sure, when you start. So yeah, and then I've read, obviously, The Road Back to You, which is one of her most popular ones. And then, mm-hmm, my covenant group also looked at some videos looking at the different triads and, mm-hmm, and all of that. I will say it was a lot. And so I don't know how much I really remember. Mm-hmm. But we looked at those. That's been at least a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. Awesome.
What was the journey like for you discovering your type? Like, did you know it immediately? Did you mistype initially as another number or anything, yeah, like that?
I want to say it was a little hard finding my number. I think, you know, I'm definitely not a perfectionist. I don't have that one. I don't have that inner critic. Mm-hmm. And then, but I do, I kind of almost thought I was a three for a little bit, because I do have that kind of performer, you know, I have a theater background. And so I've got that sort of achievement, but a little bit, but not really. Once I, mm-hmm, really dug into two, I was like, oh, that really is me. So yeah, I felt like, okay, I do like to help people. I do think about other people a lot, and that's kind of my main focus. Just very, very relationship oriented. So I felt, mm-hmm, like, oh, okay, two's definitely it. But it wasn't super crystal clear at first, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I think that's always good for people to hear that too. Like it's okay. Did you ever try to take any of the tests or anything?
I think probably in the early days, but then I think Suzanne was real big on like,
yeah,
don't just take a test. Like it's something you have to read about each type and then you identify, like it's not going to be a BuzzFeed quiz where you answer, mm-hmm, a few questions and it's like, oh, you're this. Also because you get into the similar to like Myers-Briggs and different things, like depending on how you're feeling that day, right, you can have different things. So you kind of have, right, to think the long stretch of like, how am I more how do I feel? How do I act? How do I think on a more consistent kind of basis, I guess.
That's a really good point. Cause especially if you're in either your stress number or your health number,
right,
when you're answering a quiz,
for sure,
those could definitely come out more than the others. That's,
yes,
a really good point. Cause I think people do just want to take a quiz and know, but it's like, you got to actually do some work for the Enneagram.
Yes, you do have to kind of dig a little bit deep and you have to be able to read about like, again, yeah, the unhealth, like this is how you act when you are in stress. This is how you act. So then it kind of points you back to, okay, what's your original number? And a lot of people just want to read like the top part of like, this is what a two is, this is what a four, whatever. And like, yes, no, but then you have to read, you got to dig deep and see like, oh yeah, I definitely am that. So yeah.
Yeah. A little bit more work there. So for yourself, what aspects of your number do you feel like you come out most during everyday life when you're at work or when you're solving problems? Do you see it in different places?
Sure. So I think for a while there, I thought I guess the biggest thing is, because I think ahead, I'm very, very observant. I can read a room. I think I can read people. But there's something about some things I thought, well, this is just how a mom operates. And I don't know if people can identify, mm-hmm, this with, I feel like as a mom, you're always thinking through like all the different things. Like, you know, like for example, when you go on vacation, you're like, okay, I need to board the dog, but I need to make sure that vaccinations are up to date. And then I need to make sure you go through all the, cause you're always thinking about everyone else. Like, you know, I'm, yeah, the last person to pack cause I'm getting everyone else ready. So for a long time I thought, oh, that's just being a female even.
Yeah. Or our culture. Cause our culture really likes that about,
right,
females in particular.
But then I started digging a little bit more into how twos really, I mean, they think through everyone else's needs. How can you make them more comfortable? How can you make sure they're taken care of? And I've seen that kind of in the workplace where I try to be, which is not a bad thing, but I try to be more accommodating to what other people want, and making sure that, you know, they are heard, and I usually speak last, you know, but again, like not wanting to talk about my needs or my desires. It usually is on the back burner. And so I kind of see that.
How does that make you feel when you have to talk about your needs?
fairly uncomfortable. I do have a really hard time articulating it. Probably not so much in a workplace, although I'm really curious being on a new staff and not knowing people, how am I going to interact in meetings? Obviously, I've been at Lover's Lane for 10 and a half years, so I became more comfortable expressing things because I just understood people and I felt like I had a place. Now that I'm like new, I am curious to see how that happens. But I would say probably in my marriage most is where I have a real hard time just coming out and saying what I want and what my needs. So, I mean, pretty much 99% of our conflicts are because I just simply can't communicate what I want. I joke how I'm like a master, like I have a degree in being passive aggressive. That's one thing that twos do. I'm so good at being passive aggressive. And, you know, my poor husband Scott's like, you know, if you would just say it, we could avoid a lot. I'm like, I know, but I don't know what it is. It's just hard to express it.
Ashley, do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny how you kind of pointed out articulating it, because I feel like I can always get snatches of things that I want or that I feel. Mm-hmm. But even after, like if I'm asked on the spot something about me that I feel or want, I feel like I can say part of it. But then later I'm always sitting there going, well, that's not exactly what I meant.
Yeah.
Or that ended up sounding extreme because I was trying to come across, but you know, like it's, yeah.
Do you ever have remorse for then like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or it wasn't a big deal, or like,
I mean, I feel like sometimes for me, at least I either when I'm trying to overcome not getting what I need or what I want, cause I went through like a small renaissance, where I like turned over some of my friendships and different things and was like, I'm going to get what I need this year. And it was, you know, all around like the time I started my job at Christ United. And so it's funny, I came on staff and I was like, I'm going to be myself. And then I was like, I don't know how to be myself.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was probably a lot of things. But I don't know. It's not like imposter syndrome. Like, it's not like that. It's right. Just. I need entirely too long to figure out exactly what I want. Yeah. I mean, can you share a particular story or an example of a time that you noticed you were sliding into your stress to security numbers, or even, you know, you kind of mentioned your wings just a little bit, but
yeah.
How do you experience the 8 and the 4?
So, and it's interesting. I don't get into the 8 that much, even when I'm stressed, but I think probably with that, you know, I can get a little bit more aggressive, but not really. I mean, I think you could talk to people I've worked with, and you know, I might send like one kind of aggressive email, like, but then I also feel like horrible about it later. You know, like I'm like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have done that. And it's usually like over something small, which I hope like the staff's not like, oh, is she really unpredictable? Cool. No, not that, but I'm just not very aggressive. Like here's a really great example. So I have this group of friends, that we've taken a lot of trips with, and you know, so long car trips. And one of my friends was like, okay, if there's one quality you wish that you could have, what would it be? And so we all go around, and this is a perfect example of a two, like not knowing. I literally said, well, I'd like to be assertive, I guess.
I guess.
So yeah.
I couldn't even commit to that.
I couldn't even commit to that. I had to add, I guess. I'm like, cool, such a two. So I think 8, I don't lean into it very often. Even when I'm stressed, I think I'm more shut down more than get just aggressive.
Unhealthy kind of two space.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then four, you know, I want to classify. I know when fours are really healthy, because I know that's supposed to be like the growth for the two, mm-hmm. getting comfortable with emotions. You know, I think I just don't know how to handle them. And so I think I bottle them up more and I just feel it. So yeah, it's hard to talk through things, which is, you know, why I have a counselor, which is helpful, mm-hmm. and all of that. So I would say, I don't know what I do. Sometimes I'm like, I feel like I'm a healthy two, but then some things about me, I just feel like the biggest thing is I just feel like I shut down a lot. Cause I don't know what to do with when I feel overwhelmed with stress or emotions and all of that.
Yeah. That's interesting. I feel like I do that a little differently. I think that Kristen, you can attest to that when I'm stressed, I become very vocal. I don't understand what's happening.
The burning. It's yeah, but you do have to get to your tipping point where it's like she's obviously held this in and now she's done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's kind of how I am too. Like I'm really good until then I'm not. Like Scott, you know, my husband's like, you're the nicest person until you're not. Until and you're then not. It's just like duck and cover, you know, like it's just.
Oh. Yeah, I spent a lot of time helping and running some worship events at Union Coffee with Mike Bachman. And he actually pointed it out really well to me one time because we were going through a really tumultuous time of like team building and different things like that. And I was really upset. And I kept telling him, I was like, I was so upset. And I don't understand why I'm so upset and why I can't get over this. And he was like, someone poked your friend. And I was like, what does that mean? And he was like, the only time I see you blow up is when someone pokes your friend. People can poke you a lot and it takes a really long time. But then someone pokes your friend and like, you can't handle that.
Yeah.
That's really funny you say that. I think it was last week or the week before, I was really frustrated about something. And I was telling Trent, I go, Ashley's the best person to call when you're frustrated because she gets more mad than you are. Like, she's like, I go at the end of the conversation, I was calming her down and I'm like, I think it's not that bad. I think it's okay. But she was like, no, this is not okay. So yeah, I've witnessed that too. Cause I feel your loyalty sometimes to me, Ashley.
I know. Well,
I appreciate that, but I also have to be aware of that too.
I know. I'm just a dog being ready to be let out. Just let me know. Let me know.
Yeah. I think too, is like when a friend is mad, like I think I've learned one thing as a two is to be like, okay, what do you actually need? Do you need me to be mad with you? Do I need to? And I think that shows maturity because sometimes we bulldoze over friends and bulldoze because we think we know what they need. And so that's one thing I think I've probably learned in the last couple of years. So yeah, you know, if you need to call me and vent, I can totally be that person. I can get mad with you. And then if I need to be like, tell you that you're wrong, then I can do that.
Yep.
All good friends to have.
Yes.
So for the twos, their winning message is that it's not okay to have your own needs. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you can easily identify that as something you felt in your childhood, even if it was unintentionally communicated, or does that message not really fit your description here?
Yeah. So I kind of go back and forth of, okay, I really do believe a lot. Most of us are just wired a certain way and why nature does have influence, you know? And so I have questions about that because as a child, I definitely thought I don't need to bring my problems or troubles to my parents. Like I don't need to express that. But that was only really because it wasn't the way they raised me or talked to me or anything like that. But I have two older brothers. I have one that's 4 years older and then one that's about 7.5, almost 8 years older. And when I was in like middle to late elementary school, both of my brothers were just going through some really hard things that really needed my parents' attention in rightly so. It wasn't like I don't hold any anger or jealousy or anything towards my brothers or my parents. Like, they were where they needed to be, absolutely. But I think, I don't know if that just emphasized that what was already there, if I was already a two. But because I learned that, and it was really, really in my face, and I kind of knew that at, you know, by the age of like 10, that just carried me through. And so I think for sure that's influenced how I've operated in some relationships or friendships, or again, in my marriage, not knowing how to express that. Cause I'm like, I don't want to be a bother. I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be all these things, like, and just almost a pressure to feel like I am the strong one, being a two. You know, you're often like the caretaker, of a group, you know? And so I feel like kind of like if your family's going through something, like, you want to be strong for your kids. And so you don't want to show, although there's some issues, like your kids should see, like, you have emotions, like, they need to see you process through things. But I think there's just a pressure as a two to kind of hold it all together. And so that can be not so good for not only, you know, yourself, but then those around you.
Yeah, I totally understand. I'm a three with a heavy two wing, and I grew up with a sister who is deaf, and she's only 17 months younger than me. So also obviously unintentional.
Sure.
But my parents needed to focus on her more.
Yep.
And so I grew up, having been a therapist, I know now, but I grew up thinking I needed to take care of myself because they had too much on their plate.
Yep.
And so I just needed to figure this out all on my own. And they never said that or anything. It's just, as a child, you're very aware of the situations. And I think that's why, you know, one of the reasons I also have a hard time expressing my needs too. Like, it's just, it's like, well, do I really? If everyone else is okay, I'm okay though. Like, I don't really need to have needs. So I get that. You too, Ashley. I know you have had similar experiences in other ways.
I'm the oldest of three siblings, and we're all 6 years apart in between each of us. My mom liked to joke that I was a built-in babysitter, which was great for all of us and the place that my family was in at the time. And I was talking to Blake about this just, I guess it was like the night before last or something, because I'm reading, as we do this series, The Enneagram Christian Perspective by Richard Rohr, which is a heavy book. And he, like, man, reading the two chapter was super hard. I felt like, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see other people of other numbers read the book, because I can't tell if he was just being hard on twos.
Well, and you felt like that he was with the ones also.
Yeah, I guess I did.
So is he just hard on every number?
Maybe. Or
he is a one.
It was just funny because one of the things that he talked very down on, like, the childhood of twos and, like, this egregious childhood of twos. And I couldn't relate to that. I'm like, no, I didn't have this, like, sad, despondent childhood.
Right.
But I did have siblings that I needed to take care of because both my parents worked. Or when my mom wasn't working, we were homeschooling. So we're all home and we're all doing stuff. And I think that some of that, you know, especially being an older sibling, you often get the, could you just please help your brother? Could you please just do this? And it's like, oh yeah, of course. And it's not the thing you should do, but it's we talked about this last episode too. I do think that, like, your birth order and all of that stuff rubs off on you for sure. Cause my youngest sister is a very intense eight. Like, the baby of the family, she has zero problems expressing what she needs and what she wants and how she wants it. And I just think it's hilarious because I'm so opposite of that in my, like, healthy moments. But
it's so, it's just, and I think when we always talk about this question, it always makes me think, as a mom, what, you know, how am I raising my children? And it is so hard because as a, like, Reagan, I know you can talk to this too, because I've already, I know I'm not supposed to type people, but I've already typed my oldest as a one, like, especially last week when Meredith was talking, I was like, cause even I thought, oh, but she's so silly sometimes. And Meredith's like, I was a goofy kid, but I just feel like I have to be so careful asking her to do, like you said, Ashley, like, and it's not like, I think the responsibility is good. It's just like a balancing act. Like, how do I nurture, but not, I don't know, Reagan, have you seen any of that with your, I mean, I know Jude is only 9 months, but
Jude's eight for sure. He knows what he wants. He wants a bottle
all the time. He's boss baby right now, isn't he?
You know, for a long time, I thought Andy was maybe a two, or I don't know. Like, she's just so empathetic, like she's so like caring, but I think she might be a one too, as well, just because she's got this perfectionist, like when she works on school, like she gets real frustrated if she makes a letter wrong, you know, and I'm like, babe, you're so good. So I don't know. I just have no idea. I guess it's that inner voice, you know. Right. I don't want to be like, do you hear a bad voice in your head?
I honestly almost asked Lila that yesterday because Meredith was talking last week, you know, just like the sense of right. Like I, as a three, have a sense of right that's really according to what others think. Like I'm like, oh, okay, this is the right situation based upon what this person is. But Lila got so, we were driving by somewhere and like landscapers were cutting down trees and all of a sudden she was pissed. And I was like, what just happened? I mean, we've done nothing. And she's like, I cannot believe they're doing that to nature. And I was like, whoa, okay.
You're like, okay.
But she has such a sense of right and wrong already that I really want to go up to Meredith and be like, how would you have liked to have been parented? Because I just want to make sure that I'm not feeding the inner critic sometimes.
I worry about the, not that one to necessarily have this, but just how do I not parent with shame? Because they always say that's the worst thing, worst way to parent. And I'm like, sometimes I creep into that. It's real hard.
I know.
I need to work on a lot of things. That's so interesting. And it feels like such a double-edged sword. Like, I'm not a parent, but yeah, you're like, I don't want to overparent. I don't want to underparent. I don't want to overdirect. I don't want to underdirect. am I paying attention to each of them enough equally? It's entirely too much stress, ladies. I'm just going to say.
I know. I'm gonna let it go for like 2 minutes.
So let's ask this next question then. What would you say is your number superpower? What does your number allow you to do that you feel like enhances your life or the lives of others around you?
Let's see. Just everything about me, really. I just feel like I really enhance everyone's life. Just resonate. So no.
No,
Jews do have a sense of humor, if people didn't know. I think I can confidently say that.
There you go. I think it goes back to, like, I feel like because I can think through, okay, how can I make things easier for someone, or like, how can I take care of them? And so, like, you know, these are such, they're small examples, but this is just the way I operate is like, okay, so I know, okay, so let's say I know Scott needs to leave early in the morning. I need to make sure that I pack his lunch, and then I need to make sure I'll load that thing in his car that he needs. And, you know, like, so he doesn't have to think through things, which I know is probably not.
Oh, you are the nicest wife.
Well, not all the time. He'll, you know, but, or like if I'm going on a road trip with a friend, like I make sure I get their favorite snack, you know, like I think about, it's just this, and like, okay, how can I make sure that I make whatever experience, whatever I'm doing, good and fun and easy for a person? And so it's really like a lot of small things. Like, again, it goes back to being super observant. Like, I joke about how, like, again, I'm sure the staff and congregation will be so glad to hear this. Like, I feel like I didn't learn much in seminary that I really remember. because they can't teach you a lot of things how to actually be a pastor in seminary. It's just mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, old stuff that people, you know, an average congregant's not going to ask you about. But like mm-hmm. when I'm like, hey, isn't your anniversary coming up? Or like, I know this is your first Thanksgiving without your mother. Like, those are the things that I remember. Mm-hmm. Like, my mind grabs hold of even the tiniest details. You know, I will remember in a year, like, oh, I remember that person had a really bad season, and this is a year anniversary of them like conquering something, or like they've been sober for this long. Like, mm-hmm. those are the things that my mind and my heart hold like really tightly too. And so I may not be able to tell you what some theologians wrote about hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but like, by golly, I'm going to remember if this is a hard holiday season because it's your first one without a loved one. And so mm-hmm. I think that's probably my gift or how I can love people better, I guess.
Oh, that's huge. That's huge. And I wish I was better at that. That's one of the things that I'm like passively good at, but it's not necessarily my skill. I can more so tell,
feelings.
Yeah. Like, I can tell even if someone's trying to hide it, if they're having a really bad day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mediator as well, at least in my friend groups. I'm able to kind of understand where everybody's coming from and can usually solve problems once people have their glitter all flustered. But yeah, more so in that area.
No, that's great.
Remembering birthdays. I wish I was good at that. It's funny. It's like, I know that I could just use a calendar. Like, I could just be more organized.
That's way too easy.
That's easy, right?
Yeah. And I read that the two with the three wing is like described as the perfect hostess, just how they would be able to, you know. And I'm sure, because like you said, with the snacks, I'm sure whoever would be coming to your house, you would probably think five steps ahead on what they like to do or how they're comfortable. That's kind of what I envision the hostess aspect being.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do think that, although my husband does all the cooking, so...
Well, I'm sure you menu planned. You're like, well, Scott, I think they'd really enjoy this.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, are you making it? Do whatever you want.
All right. So for those who are twos who are trying to reach the health of their number, do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, I mean, they write about this a lot, just check your motivation a lot. Like, if you're...
Can you talk about that more? I think that's really important to hear about the motivation of the two. It's not obvious.
Mm-hmm. So like, sometimes you really do things just because you want the big thank and praise and the like, you want to make yourself feel really good and you want that person to like then become almost dependent on you, you know, like mm-hmm. there could be some really healthy like codependency and all that kind of stuff. And so like, I know during this time of the pandemic, like it has been hard for some twos because like we're used to helping. And when that's kind of cut off a little bit, then sometimes you literally make up things to do. Like you over function because you're like, you just have this like, again, unhealthy need to like, I need to be wanted. I need to be doing everything. And so sometimes you like, you're doing things just for the sake of, and like, you don't need to like, again, what is your motivation? Is it because you need someone to give you a thank you and just tell you how much they love you and how much they couldn't do it without you? Like, it's just, and so you just have to check yourself of like, if I'm overwhelmed, if I have a lot going on, but then I know someone maybe needs a cooked meal, like they need, like someone had a baby, like, do I need to stay up late and do a home cooked meal, or can I just send them a meal? Like, do you have to like go over and beyond just to show how great you are? And so I think the biggest thing is just check your motivation. What can you say no to? What can you remind yourself of? Like, what's the purpose of this? Like, I think that's been really helpful for me because you will run yourself ragged if you are just doing all the things all the time for everyone. It sure. just is not helpful for yourself or for anyone else, really.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Ashley, you too?
Yeah, I mean, the process of unhitching, because I think I would say I'm a two with a strong one wing, is unhinging the idea that your innate personhood value is disconnected from people's current grade of you.
Mm-hmm.
Is really, really difficult. And, you know, I think that I worry about that kind of stuff way too much. You know, the home cooked meal or the even, you know, at work, like getting something done in such a timely manner that I know that it's helpful. And so it's, you know, it's like, oh, well, I got this done immediately. It didn't need to be done immediately. Like, it just didn't. But yeah. it allows me
extra stress on yourself.
Right. Yeah. It allows me to put one more little like dash point next to, okay, I know Ashley is a good employee. Yeah. You know, Ashley's worth having here. And, you know, when you start doing that in friend groups as well, especially when you're friends with people who aren't twos, who aren't measuring you that way.
Right.
What you are playing soccer on a tennis court. And it is just like not helpful to anybody yeah. involved. I've had so many dear friends look at me when I'm just in pieces because I think that they have lost their love for me. Mm. And, yeah. you know, this, that, and the other. And they're like, you know, I would tell you if I was mad at you, right? Like, I would, because I would. And I'm like, okay, thank you. I'm best friends with a five. And that is one of the best things about... Fives will tell you how it is. They're all about facts. And so she when we got really deep in a friend, like in a friendship talk one time, she goes, oh, well, I'll just always, no matter what, tell you if I'm displeased with something. Will that help?
I was like, I live in fear all the time.
Yeah. I'm like, actually, yes, but be careful how you say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if it's like via text and I see your name pop up and I'm like, is this the one?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny. But yeah, no, it's like a continuing process of health growth to go, nope, I'm super valuable and I'm mm-hmm. fun to be around. And even if I, just like you said, Rick, and even if I don't bake cookies, mm-hmm. It's still a gift. It's still yes. a gift worth having.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I listened to Jen Hatmaker's podcast, and she's going through the Enneagram right now. And in her interview with a two, she also said how important it is for, I think it's important for all of us to have alone time, but especially for the twos to have alone time so you can actually get in touch with what your needs are away from everyone else. Mm-hmm. So you can actually listen to the inner guidance you're having too.
So I know that Richard Rohr is rough, but there was this part of the two dilemma that I had to underline. Lots of people know this about me. I know Kristen does, but I'm constantly listening to Harry Potter books.
True story.
Constantly. I listen to all of them audiobook with Stephen Fry probably at least 3 times a year all the way through.
Oh, wow. That's a commitment.
It well, and it's just because it's the thing that is that I like to have on in the background. So if I'm cooking or doing something, unless I've got something new I'm listening to, it's very calming for me. Well, Richard Rohr said, twos have a hard time finding their center. When they're alone, the ceiling can fall on their head. Meditation mm-hmm. and prayer in a, quote, quiet little room for long makes them feel anxious because no one is there to reinforce them and be close to them. And because they're afraid to find nothing in themselves except a black hole of alarming unrest. Whoa,
okay, thanks. Thanks.
Ooh, all right.
See, he just takes it to like three levels yeah. above.
Yeah, it really was. Like at first, you're like, okay, yeah, I could see okay. you being anxious in a small room. Oh, now you're in a black hole of despair. Yeah. That escalated rather quickly. You get that
embroidered on a throw pillow.
I know. Yeah. Great. It was for flowers. But yeah, I identified with it, but both thought it was a bit extreme. But yeah. I also think that it's one of the reasons that I like to have something playing
yeah. in the background. Yeah, I don't like to be yeah. by myself. Like that mm-hmm. meditation, yeah. I listened to that same podcast, The Jen Hatmaker, and when she talked about going to like a silent retreat, I'm like, oh, that is my definition of hell. Like,
can we text each other while we're
silent? Like, I'm such an extrovert. Like, you know, I don't like being home. Not that I get to be home alone at all now with kids, but I remember back before, like even before I was married, like I wouldn't sit in my apartment. Like, I would at least go to a coffee shop just to have people around me. Like, you would never find me just sitting alone in my apartment because I'm like, nope, I don't know how to function. So it probably would be really good for me to go on a, like a silent retreat or some sort of meditation. But I'd probably have to start with like maybe 20 minutes, but not like start with 3 days because I think I would have a mental breakdown.
Right. And I'm almost convinced because, like, honestly, in all the Hatmaker podcast interviews, everyone, every single number has been like meditation. But I think it's because there, I think everyone's motivation is different, though, why they need to be in a silent room. So that's, although nines, I wonder if nines are fine.
Probably.
But like 1 through 8, it'd be really interesting to go through all those numbers and find out why they hate being in a quiet space by themselves.
And we kind of talked about this too, I can't remember when, but we were talking about like self-care and how self-care also crops up, and how we thought it'd be fun to do a podcast just about like each number's version of restorative self-care. And what that looks like, because it'd probably be very different between the numbers.
We can make this podcast series go on forever, guys, don't worry.
So what advice do you have for others who are in relationships with twos? I don't know Scott's number, but so what is a really good friend, a friend that helps you become better and feel cared for look like for a two for you?
I think what makes me feel cared and appreciated, you know, I mean, I do like a thank you. I mean, I'm good. But like, I think what would be helpful for me is like, yes, give me a thank you, but you don't need to like go on and on because that just feeds the unhealthy, like, and to press me on like what I want and what I need, because I feel like if you create a safe space for a two, then they're going to feel more willing and more vulnerable to actually say what's deep down in their heart. So I think, you know, one, thanking us, but don't go overboard, and then creating space for us to share what's lingering inside of us that we're sometimes too afraid to articulate, I think.
I've also heard it's good to think a two for who they are, not just the act
of what they did. For sure.
Does Scott, I assume Scott knows his since he also went through seminary.
Yeah. So he is a one, but he looks like a nine. And so he's a one because he's got that inner critic voice. But it's funny how once, you know, you think, I'm not going to think one like perfectionist, which he is in certain areas. Like it's so, I mean, each number is fascinating, but one is really fascinating in the way of like, they can be perfectionist in some area. But like he's a slob, like he's not.
You're like we didn't get the OCD house portion like, of this number.
Could I just get a little splash of that, just a little bit? And so it's just interesting how he, you know, he'll work on an email for like way too long to make sure every word is right. But then
is he a good editor? Is he a good grammar person?
Phenomenal. He was also then his undergrad was like English, so yeah. It's just funny the way that the ones, but he looks more like a nine, really. So
that's so interesting. I think it's good for people to hear, especially when we talk about ones. I think everyone does think, oh, the ones must be so clean, or I'm obviously not a one since I'm super clean. But it's just, that's more of like a stereotype.
Yeah. Yeah.
The actual characteristic.
Only one way for it to play out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That is very interesting. What is your favorite and least favorite thing about being a two?
I love relationships. I love being with people. I love knowing stuff about them in a way that allows me to care for them in a really kind of specific, unique way. I love that. And then was the question like least favorite thing?
Yeah. Do you have a least favorite part of your number?
Yeah. My least favorite is that like I get in conflict. It's so easy to solve if I would just say what I need. And so it's almost frustrating that I'm like, I could avoid fighting with my husband. I could avoid so much if I just said it from the get go and didn't mm-hmm. beat around the bush. If I didn't try to hint at it, like if I just said it, like, why is it so hard? So that's my least favorite thing is that, yeah, I feel like I could avoid so much conflict if I just came right out and said it.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel vulnerable to come out and just say it? Is that?
It is. And I think it goes back to feeling maybe that childhood thing of like, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to make you feel guilty. I don't want you to feel like you have failed or you have done this. Like, I don't know. It's just this weird, really weird place because like, I want to care for people and I should want to be cared for too. But it's like, but if I tell you this, then you're going to care for me. Like, it's just this weird, like
uncomfortable feeling.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know.
I think that sometimes I worry about asking and then the person refusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
That came to mind too.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
scary. Yeah. Yeah. I think the only other thing, and I think that's just because it's something I'm going through this week, I've got my schedule too full. Or not my schedule too full, but like my emotional, I feel like I need to be in like four places at once. And I don't know how to sort out how to take care of four people in four different places.
Yeah.
At the same time. And so I often feel like I have to pick and choose. And that's rough. I don't know who needs my attention more right now.
Like Sophie's choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It is real hard right now, like having to tell just with COVID stuff, like, mm-hmm. okay, I have to pick who I'm going to hang out with.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Who are my safe people?
Yes.
And then tell people like, I can't hang out with you. Like, yeah. It seems so awful.
Yeah. And especially if it's family members who I'm not feeling are being as safe.
Right.
I hate conflict. So it's just, ugh.
Yeah.
I know.
Uncomfortable.
What do you wish people understood about being a two? Like if there was one thing that you could leave with people about twos, what would it be?
Yeah. Well, I think because there is, I think what's broadcasted a lot is like, the two's motivation is because they want to be wanted and appreciated. And so I think as more people read about that, there's going to be a lot of distrust in twos and mm-hmm. think like, oh, you're not authentic. You actually don't really care about me. It's for you. And so I hope people can know that a lot of things we do is because we genuinely do love and care for you. We're not wanting that. And so I hope there's not the sudden, again, the distrust or like questioning the motivation to where like, mm-hmm. I don't think you actually want to do that. You just need another check mark. You need another like accolade. You need another trophy in your head. And so I hope people know that twos do fiercely love people and want to do all we can. And so until we become unhealthy or smother you, like just trust that it does come from a genuine place.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. What advice do you have for people that are just starting out on this Enneagram journey?
So my biggest thing is this is my pet peeve. I hate when people are like, well, I'm an eight, so that's just what I do. Or I'm a, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. no. Like,
not an excuse.
It's not an excuse. That's why I am thankful for that when you dive more into it and you look at health and stress and like where you move and all of that. Like, just because you're a certain number doesn't mean that's your excuse for things that you're just stuck there. Like there's still so much growth you need to do so you can to grow and to be in a health place and try to not get in those unhealthy patterns. And so don't go to the Enneagram just so you can one, make excuses for yourself. And also so you can, you know, place someone else, you know, like that's one thing mm-hmm. Suzanne's like, don't, you know, it's not your job to tell what number someone is. Which I know we all do, though. We all do it. Like, once you learn, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to go through my list of people in my family and identify all of them.
I try to keep it in my head.
Right, yeah. And so I think it's just really good to give grace for people. And I will say the Enneagram, although I've talked about how I'm not always a very good spouse, it has allowed me to love people better. Because if I know their number, like in a way that they have told me and like we've talked about it, because it does allow me to give grace. It does allow me to be more forgiving. It does allow me to just be more understanding with them and patient. And I think once you learn at least a little bit about each number, you know, don't just dive into yours, like explore all of it, because it is so helpful in relationships, because I think you have to try to understand people, put yourself in their shoes. And when you look at it through the eyes of a different number, you're like, oh, okay, this is what makes sense to them. No wonder we're having conflict. No wonder they're feeling down. No wonder they've retreated. No matter, you know, like, so then you can be like, okay, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Because you can identify their behavior, and not in an aggressive, mean way, but like, okay, I think you're kind of acting out in this way. What can we do to get you back to in a healthy way? I think it does allow you to love people better and more fully, and I think that's such a gift.
Oh, it's such a good point. That's why we hope everyone listens to each podcast episode during the series, and not just their number, so that they know who they're in relationship with.
Yeah.
So as we start to wrap this episode, even though I think we could probably keep going, I hope that this time with us has helped you feel more connected, encouraged, and enlightened. I know it was for me. Such a great opportunity to sit down with Reagan, whose first day was so recent, to just get to know you on this like amazing level. I feel like it's going to make working and doing things together, working on projects, even easier.
Yeah.
Thank you for sitting down with us.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you asking me.
Yeah, we can't wait to get to know you better and more, and have the whole congregation eventually get to meet you.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, but digitally very soon.
Yes, for sure.
And thanks to you out there who are listening and growing along with us. We're so glad to have you on this journey. So until next time, love yourself, love others, and know that God loves you just for who you are. Bye.